I'm not supposed to be here. You're not supposed to be here. Supposed to be two people here. I'm supposed to be at the comedy store, kissing Tommy's ass, saying thanks for passing me. Is it possible going a little earlier? Is it possible going a little earlier? Is it possible going a little earlier? I used to write 3 hours a day. I can't write without Adderall. I have a girlfriend who's becoming normal. She doesn't know it. She's the funniest person in the world, the hottest piece of ass, you know? But she showed me zits on her ass from where I piss on the toilet. I don't care. That's what I do. But we had a big fight because I didn't go like, oh my God, that zits from my piss. I lived with guys for 75 years. I was a male prostitute. The last thing I'm worried about is zits on your ass from my piss. Like, I don't care. I was a romantic. Compared to her, I'm like Jean Cocteau, Rimbaud, Baudelaire, Mon Beau Chat, Mon Petit Cocotte. And she's like, just punch me in the fucking throat or shove your dick in me. You know, he's like, I don't know, Rick. You know, when guys were bored with me on a Saturday, they would just put their fingers in my pussy, but you don't like doing that. I'm like, I got a lot on my mind. I have to make it out here. I'm juggling a lot of insane thoughts. You know, that's why I can't fuck. I'm juggling insane thoughts, trying to hold on to my sanity.
Welcome to Highway Diary. I'm your host, Eric Hollerbach. With me, Rick Shapiro.
What's it called, Hollywood what?
Highway Diary.
Highway Diary. That's
yeah.
Good. I thought it was Hollywood Diary. And I was like, oh, I'm huge now.
So, hey, we actually worked together doing stand-up in the Belly Room, a show that Rebecca O'Brien put together. That's where I first met you, actually. And I thought your shit was hilarious. You had all these clumps and notes. You know, you were talking about the craziest shit. How long have you been doing stand-up, man? And your style is so, you know, you're so open about everything. Your dark past, you know, those are the comedians that I think are the most important, you know, the ones that kind of reveal the darkest sides of themselves.
It's almost like they had to discover AA and NA and all that stuff where people could admit they were incested or they were... Right. Or they're scared, or they're anxious. Otherwise, it would have been like post-industrial world, you know, where nobody admits anything, but everybody, men think they have to be John Wayne. I grew up in the 70s, so I just think you have to be Henry Miller. Now people think you have to be a spineless man with a feather for his spine. A gummy worm, a knit cap. You just have to be loose and have no opinions.
Right, right.
Did you witness that? People, your age?
They don't. A lot of people don't want to make an opinion. So if you have a different opinion, they'll be offended or something like this. So they'll like have a lot of things to avoid actually saying what they feel because they're so afraid of being offensive or, you know.
Offensive to disagree with someone.
Right.
Can you imagine that's a world... That's what this country has clearly become all about. Like, can you imagine that... Do you realize there was a time where... You could yell across a restaurant to someone and talk about socialism or tell him he's wrong about socialism or right about socialism, and he'd be talking about, the other guy would be talking about imperialism, capitalism, communism, and now people are afraid. I mean, if you really think about it, we live in a world where I realize I wave my hands a lot when I talk. That's how I grew up in a city where people were talking back and forth. And about 10 years ago it happened that waiters would come up to you. They started to come up to you. And when they gentrified the areas, the restaurants weren't in place where you heard silverware drop and you yelled at each other or you would just talk loud and have fun.
Right.
But they were, people would barely whisper and you'd hear the tinkle of the fork taking a piss.
Because no, people don't have anything to talk about.
No, people do have something to talk about. It became undesirable, they thought. They were programmed. It was being put out into the ether by politicians, by Fox News, by Fox News, that you're crazy if you have a different opinion right. than the rich,
right?
Than the corporations. The corporations were busy manipulating... Going, it goes all the way into everything. They went into good comedy, told comics what they can't say. Mm-hmm. Do people really want to hear like Ray Romano talk about his Laundry and his wife and his kid. I mean, Ray's foot buddy. I've seen him on stage. He's great, but there are, like, I got married and there are secrets that I try to bring out on stage right in front of my wife. I hate calling her that. I don't feel like she's my wife. I feel like she's like,
yeah, you got married this past summer, you know.
I feel like she's a watermelon or a good fruit. You know, like, I don't feel like she's a wifey object.
Mm-hmm.
But, or a wifey spirit. But now they legalized pot, so it either works for you or it quells you.
Right.
It's what the government wants. For you to be so happy about your pot cards that you forget about health care. Oh, they didn't forget about health care. Oh, we got to throw something else in about health care.
Right.
Forget about the Afghan war. You just weren't. Because so many people ran around victorious about their pot cards to me, and I was like, you think that's a victory? Who gives a shit? You know, you know, buy it illegally.
Yeah, there's always been a way to get that, but on the basis, we're still fucked, like at the base of the issue, if you look into it.
Why do you say that? That's interesting.
Well, I don't know, like, you know, it just seems like politician after politician has the same policy of war and pumping chaos energy into the stratosphere. It's like, what else is the point of Iraq after there's no weapons of mass destruction? Then they're like, oh, we have to go into Syria. Well, why? Because their mission is chaos. It seems like their mission is to be fucking vampires of the evening, and they're not really interested in helping anybody.
Who, Syria?
No, the U.S. government.
Right, you know? Right. Like there was a bombing in Iraq, and now we're back in Iraq.
Right.
You know, something like 20,000.
And also, the way they're fighting Iraq is they're going, oh, let's drive Humvees around from city to city on peace missions, and then whoever shoots at us must be the bad guy. Well, how about that's a farmer who got screwed over by Monsanto, or that's a farmer whose housewife was liquidized in a drone attack that missed, you know, the bomb missed the bad guy and it actually blew up the housewife.
Yeah.
Well, then we're a murderer, okay? Yeah. So then that guy has every right to shoot at a Humvee going by, because what else is he going to do? How else is he going to settle the score? If you watch movies, you know, when someone's family gets shot up, that's when the action hero comes into play and gets him back from the bad guy, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you got to look at that guy, just because he's wearing a turban doesn't mean he's not the hero of his own movie trying to fight against an evil empire blowing up his family.
Right. People now know why we invade. It's not for humanity's sake.
Right.
It's for our own profit. So, if I carry a gun, the repercussion is I might run into a civilian who carries a gun. A civilian might run into a soldier who carries a gun. When a civilian picks up a gun, it's like, I wish that were the answer.
Right.
And it seems like it really is, but people in this country, it's so layered, like an infrastructure of making sure people don't want to shoot the president or they won't get good tickets to Spider-Man. You know, like some kind of leverage like that. It's like you can't get the new baby diaper doll, the mini Batman doll.
Yeah.
If you go to jail or something. You know?
Seems like the consolation to a lot of this. They're like, yeah, sure, we're doing all kinds of war atrocities all over the world. But hey, the new Tron movie's pretty great, so let's just
pump that out.
Yeah, let's distract all these idiots, you know, with some really cool special effects, you know, so they're not thinking.
It's so funny, we're at Denny's and all they're playing are commercials on the TV. It's like, always be distracted, never centered.
Yeah, don't even enjoy your meal, because you could be watching this movie, or you could be watching tennis. You could be buying this thing. You could be buying the car. Anyway, you got married, you know, which is crazy because, you know, you got a bit of a reputation, you know. The things you talk about, you're very counterculture. So you kind of...
Wait, where's my reputation?
Well, I don't know. You know, you talk about being a male prostitute and stuff on stage. You know, that's pretty counterculture.
Is that counterculture?
Well, you know.
Because the heads of culture were the ones hiring boys to get head. The heads of culture were buying head.
Yeah, so that's a very interesting thing. You kind of grew up in this paradox where you were kind of a street hustler, and then for some reason you got the clientele of all these senators, you know? So
well, just a couple of those. But it was corporate guys and...
That
kind of make it sound like I blew corporate guys. You know what I'm saying? You blew gay men who had money.
Right. But you, like, you being...
I also had my run with girls, and that was fantastic.
Your run with girls?
That was amazing. When I was hired to fuck this midget would hire 18-year-old Brazilian girls, Swedish girls, they were the finest-looking beauties.
Yeah.
And they'd come out with a blindfold and pick me or this other guy, and they'd always pick me first. And these beautiful bodies, we were just fucking... It was...
Where were you where a midget manager was giving you access to a harem?
No, he wasn't a manager. He was...
Who was this character?
Well, this girl who I liked a lot became a call girl, a high-priced call girl.
Yeah.
And I was young, and I said to her, I was close to be a boy. She took me downstairs. I was living in Manhattan, and she's in a limousine putting coke up my nose, and she goes, I'm taking shopping for clothes today. I said, where are you getting all this money? She said, I'm a high-priced call girl now. And I said, really? You make a lot of money? And she told me how much. I said, oh, I want to do it.
Yeah.
And she goes, but you can't do girls until you do guys first.
Said, so to be a gigolo, you had to first do dudes?
Yeah, but I never got screwed or screwed him. Like, I always make that clear, because girls always ask me when I'm in bed with them, like, I go, 1, 2, 3, and they go, judging by your past, I have to ask you a question. I go,
yeah.
And I said, actually, prostitutes and strippers and get checked more than civilians.
Mm-hmm. So I just think it's so fascinating. I heard you on Tom Rhodes talking about how, like, you were this kind of street hustler. You were kind of living in between the cracks of the system. What you were doing was illegal, illicit. And then you met the people at the top of this pyramid, at the top of this system, senators. You said you once, when you were starting out, you blew a senator for a taco, and then they were, like, crying in your arms, and, like, these powerful people who are supposed to have, you know, be so many levels above the pyramid are just crying in your arms.
Yeah.
That must have been a real trip and really kind of...
That's actually an amalgamization, right? Alchemy of three different situations.
I just threw them together. Yeah, that was cool. Get you talking.
I want you to send. Why? Because I'm not talking.
No, I'm just trying to bring up things that I admired about that interview.
Do you realize it's your responsibility now to have an opinion in front of your friends that don't? Do you realize it's your responsibility to be informed and to incite your friends? Mm-hmm. And say, if it takes so little to incite, so little to what they think is offended, then offend them. Because it seems like you misuse the word offend. But also, this society gets weird. They don't know what offend means.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I did a show, a woman with a felt black cowboy hat on, like and it was broken or something, like cat fur all over it, and a tourist. And I didn't say anything wrong. I didn't say anything that would garner the word offensive. I was talking about how I hate Republicans.
Right.
I made a joke about Hitler. And then she goes, and then about them, these two people up front should be eating ass. And I said, how do you manage to stay in love? I said, you guys are in love, do you eat your ass? And the lady, everybody laughed, and the lady goes, you're offensive. I said, what? She goes, you're offensive. I said, and I leaned forward. I said, you got a leopard skin with polyester, like, fat lady outfit on and a cowboy hat. I said, I'm going to put it in words you can understand. You're a fucking disgusting hoarder. That's all you're good for. People should walk through your house and not even buy stuff. Just throw your shit away, all your shit. You, your family. And I leaned forward, stepped on the table, and I said... You were offended. You were taught to be offended by your own vagina, by your own thoughts. You were taught that offensive is having a lucid opinion. You don't even know what lucid means. And I go, lucid. And I said, how about this? Offensive, I'll go obvious on you. Offensive, you hoarder. Is 6 million Jews killed? That's easy for you to understand. How about your son coming back from Iraq with one fucking leg? Like 8 million of them. One fucking leg. Why don't you think about whether that's offensive or not? And see if that stirs anything up in your mind, you stupid fucking cunt. I said, you're the reason Ray Romano made $80 million because of you. Do you believe that? Because of you. And then I put my hand up and everybody started clapping.
But, yeah, it's almost like people think that it's like a noble burden to be offended. It's like the highest state of consciousness. Like, ooh.
Oh, is that what they think? That's funny.
You know what I mean? It's like, oh, I'm so above you. This gesture who's making all these kind of inflammatory things, getting people to actually think. People want to shove their face in the sand so much that if you rumble them from their slumber, then all of a sudden they're offended. Or, you know, you can put words together in certain patterns and say them with your mouth or whatever, that would cause them an emotional reaction, and that's your fault when the emotional reaction happened in their head. So it seems like it's their fault
funny.
If they're offended.
Yeah, I tell people, you were offended before you left the house. Because if you're taught to be ashamed of a part of you, then when you hear someone talk about that part, you think they're wrong.
Right.
Because you were wrong. You were right to hide it.
We're actually letting you get through that trauma of whatever that thing is. You can experience it outside so you can actually deal with it instead of just being like, that offends me. Go away. Take those words out of my head now.
Yeah.
You know?
I like Rebecca O'Brien. She lets me... You know, she lets people and wants people to be as wacky, in her words. She has a good attitude about it. That is comedy.
Yeah.
What I'm doing is comedy. I'm not a rabbi. You can disagree with what I say, you can call me wacky. You know, we should misuse the word wacky instead of offensive.
Yeah.
That's funny. I've been using it for a high school shooter, and they go, he was wacky.
I'm a doctor. I've looked at this guy. He's wacky, you know.
Yeah.
So you recorded a special at the Bowery Poetry Club in New York City the past year, and in the background of the set, you had both of your hands just, like, covered in notes.
Yeah, that was the last time I did that.
That was really interesting because, you know, so many, you know, if you write a note on your hand, you're supposed to, like, hide it, and that's supposed to be a showbiz secret that you had, like, whatever. But you're like, no, I'm going to blow my hands up as big as possible and show the world that
we did the two pictures, big portraits.
That's such cool art, and it, you know, it gives...
You know whose idea that was? That was Tracy's idea.
Oh, yeah?
I never would have thought of that. She goes... And then she made it like Wings of an Angel, like I stood in the beginning and in the middle of them, and they look like wings. She has such a great mind.
Is that being edited together or put out at all, your special at the Bowery Poetry Club?
The guy absconded with the money he owes us and the DVD. So we had to take him to court, and we won.
So you got the footage back, you just need to put it together?
Yeah. He had an editor. He said his editor's father died. It's like, he's such an infant. I sent a friend of mine who was in jail for murder for 28 years. A real beautiful Jesus freak preaching cholo murderer. And I said, you send him, you bring him the summons or whatever you've been served.
Right.
And he knocks on the door and he goes, hey, you Clay? And that's why Clay let him in. He probably wondered what my friend is. Well, I don't know. He just let him in. He goes, yes, I am. And he put his hand out and he goes, you've been served, buddy. And he goes, ba, 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 ba. And he goes, see that? He looks at the camera. He goes, that's how we do it, Rick. That's how we do it.
So you hired your friend to serve this guy?
Yeah, it's murderer. Because it's the best I could do. Because I said, how about we just kick the shit out of him? Because I've been waiting for 2 years, three years.
That's unbelievable. That he would like come up with an excuse like that and then hoard the tape from you and not give it up to you? What a scumbag.
It was awful. It hurt Tracy more than anyone because she put everything in there.
Anyway, but your career has actually been taken off recently. You were guest starred on Two Broke Girls and Louie, which is tremendously acclaimed shows, you know? You're actually starting to get... You got passed at the Comedy Store. You know, you're starting to get recognized.
Yeah, you gave me an early Saturday night spot. You know, I did Mark Maron's new show. His TV show based on that podcast.
Yeah.
And that was fun. Jesus. But the Mark Maron thing was fun, and the podcast, did you listen to our WTF podcast?
No, you know,
you should, because we made amends to each other. We started saying things from 25 years ago, like, you only meant that when you said that? And he goes, you meant that good thing when I thought you said it was, I thought you said something bad? I go, you too? And we started to really open up to each other, and he's become a nice friend.
Yeah.
He seemed like also back in the 70s. Yeah, he was on coke and you know, would start fights with people all the time and stuff. It seems like he's been actively like quelching all of his grudges that he's built up over the years.
Yeah, I don't know how these guys do it. I do coke, I go back to prostitution or the mafia, the Colombian mafia, the Puerto Rican hitman, or the Jewish mafia. My ex-girlfriend does a line of coke. She was a Sports Illustrated girl. Goes from a line of coke. She smokes crack, becomes the Prada girl all over Manhattan. Uh-huh. You know, it's like...
Some people change drugs and all of a sudden they shoot to the top, you know?
Well, yeah, right. But I just want to find, but I mean, Marin, these guys still manage to maintain a career. And sobriety, it was harder to maintain a career. If you're high, you can ignore stuff, right?
You can just get over the depression of a lot of failed auditions.
Yeah, I love auditions, though. I love that actors say they hate auditions.
Yeah.
To me, it's like, well, are you acting today? He goes, no. I go, yeah, I don't know, audition. You got to play that character like it's his real fucking life.
Yeah.
And they go, yeah, I never thought of it like that. It's fun. I love auditioning. If I get a better movie agent, I'd be doing movies. I did Project X. I got Louis' new one coming out. Louis' great. When he makes films, his new movie is black and white. Mm-hmm. And it's really funny. It's really,
what's it called?
Tomorrow Night.
Okay.
But he's doing that thing where he releases it on his website.
People are finding out that you're a bad motherfucker. You're the real deal. I think so, man. I hear your name pop up more and more as I go around, man.
That's funny. That's what people tell me. I always crack up, like... I was at this bar, and I asked this girl to go outside because she was so cute, and she blurted shit out, which was so funny. And she goes like this. She goes, yeah. And I said, oh, you really want it? She goes, yeah. And nobody looks at me. And it's not like I'm 6 feet tall and a model where they go, yeah. She goes, I got to. And so we got to talking to each other and fooling around a bit. And I go, you don't know anything about me, right? She goes, yeah, you're Rich Spiro, you're the comedian. You were Project, and I was like, oh, that's cool. Like, I get, these guys get it every night.
Right.
24 hours a day. I had it when I was Lucky Louie. But now I get it once in a while, or now I've worked on myself so much and I've hung in there for so long, a couple of people have pointed out I have a lot of charisma. Mm-hmm. Because it's true. They go, Rick, you've dug with a shovel for so long, your own thing. You know, if tiny kids would know that, or fucking fat Denny's fucking people would know that, they know they have a future and not a death.
Yeah.
You know, and I would be reminded by looking at them instead of having to keep looking for the inspired ones, for the ones who say, you know, you don't have to change your work, you don't have to, instead of, well, you're going to have to eventually, and I did the...
You mean like compromise and start changing your material to be cleaner or, you know, more acceptable to a general audience? Is that what you're talking about?
I feel like mine's very acceptable to a general audience because I see old Texas guys and just old guys look at me and their eyes light up like they get almost wet with acknowledgement. Mm-hmm. Like, I've been there. I get you, boy.
Right, right, right.
And then they would crack up when I would describe the hooker or something. And the women crack up at the sexiest, dirtiest shit. That's what people don't understand. The one or two people that get offended don't mean shit.
Yeah, they're just the idiots with enough free time on their hands to write a letter, so it seems like some kind of majority. You got an Uncle Tony who was a hitman, right?
Yeah. He was not my adopted uncle.
Being a mob was a family business.
It was beautiful. They took me in as their son. My uncle Tony, who said, I'm his son. He said, you're my son. He made Al Pacino and Carlito's Way look just like Al Pacino and Carlito's Way, but he made Al Pacino and Carlito's Way look like Johnny Depp. Because he had a real beard and pock marks around it. And he woke up in a miniskirt one morning and nobody had said a word. You want coffee, Tony? Yes. You know, and he's in a mini in one of the girl's skirts.
You said you were on a first date. You were saying that you, you know, were fooling around with another groupie girl who noticed you and was like, hey, you're Rick Shapiro. You know, I thought you were married. Is it like an open relationship or what's going on there?
That is a beautiful question. We're going to try again.
But you guys took a break?
Yeah. But she said we broke up. She says it's over. And this is the first time I didn't argue. I said, yeah, I think you're right. I said, and she was packed up and moving to going to visit Florida. And I said, I'm going to stay in a hotel because I don't want her to be putting her manipulative, you know, I'm not going to do that thing. You know how women are. Now I just realize why men go, when they're talking about their wives, they go, you know what women do. Right, no, you're talking about your wife, and you're too afraid to say it's your wife. Right. You know how they frighten us?
They, like, generalize it more.
But that's what I'm saying. Look how freaked out we are over women. Look how freaked out we, as fucking men, you know?
No.
Freaked out. I am freaked out. I'm a frightened. My shrink goes, when did you become a wimp? I said, the day I met Tracy.
Because she just knows how to manipulate you. She knows how to pull the levers in your mind.
She knows them all. And she's half her family that she doesn't hang around with is mob. So she has this left hook. Like, she has no shame in punching the shit out of you.
Right.
You know, like, I saw her coming at me. We used to have bad physical fights and we stopped. I go to therapy. She does it. I go to programs, which doesn't make you better than anybody else. I'm glad to know. But she doesn't. I saw her coming at me with a fist, and I said, "Oh, I didn't think I should get out of the way. My improvement, my involvement was I'm not going to hit her back. I'm just going to take the hit.
Right.
I didn't think I should run away. So I stood there. Well, she's winding up and gathering her turbo energy.
Right.
And pops me in the face, and I fall over the couch.
Oh my God!
And I said, "I got it." I said, "I'm not hitting. I'm not, you know, hitting you."
Didn't the doctor say that part of your Parkinson's could have been from traumatic brain injuries from getting into bar fights and a car accident?
Yeah, it was great. He said, "You have environmental Parkinson's."
Right. Is that the good kind of Parkinson's? Like,
yeah,
what's
yeah,
the difference?
Yeah. He goes, "It's not as bad as what I call the." Older, the mother, chain smoking Benson and Hedges with shaky fingers, down in shots of scotch, sipping her scotch on her old terrace in the backyard, thinking about her son Scotty in rehab.
That's a different part.
I hope he makes it through rehab. I hope he doesn't get molested.
You don't got that Parkinson's.
No. He said to me, "You have environmental Parkinson's." I go, "Well, what's that?" He goes, "That's not inherited. That's from too many fist fights,
right.
Car accidents, concussions."
Right. Did, now I heard, you know.
And I said, "Oh, you mean heroin?"
You know, Sam Kinison actually, quite famously, you know, was kind of a normal boy, a regular, even-tempered boy, and then he got hit by a car when he was like 8, and it kind of changed him to be a much bolder, you know, aggressive kind of personality, more right. of a troublemaker and stuff. Do you think that your car accident had anything to do with kind of shaking you out to have this rage inside that you need to perform stand-up to kind of get out? Do you think you're, you know, that...
I've always had that.
Because I had a concussion, actually. I had a bad skiing accident when I was a kid, and I'm not sure, but maybe after that concussion, you know, maybe it shook me into wanting to do stand-up, or, you know, maybe it shook something around where I had some pain inside that I needed to get out, you know?
Yeah, I just knew I annoyed my father, and I didn't know what to do with my life. Then I saw early Robin Williams.
Yeah.
Early Jonathan Winters, or late Jonathan Winters, talking to a football. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't figure out what he was doing. I couldn't figure out that that was comedy. Nobody told me anything, but I said, I like it. Then I saw Robin Williams, and I said, that's like when John Winters talks to football, and he puts on this embarrassed face to the audience, like, you know, that great face he put on. That's when I saw Robin Williams and Morgan Mindy and the concert shows, early shit, where he ran around the audience and he was sweating. Mm-hmm. Not his shit now. And I ran outside of my house, started jumping on top of cars and acting like a nut. He validated my mind, I felt, how my mind works.
Yeah.
You know, the DSM 4 or 6 or 5, you know what that is? That's the list of disorders. It used to be this big, now it's this big. Right. All the psychiatrists have it.
Sure. How many of those you got?
Well, wait. Okay. It was all the disorders, because you might not want to ask a question. And they just recently added on the news, in print, on TV, free thinking and independent mind. And having an independent mind is considered a disorder now. It's a new disorder.
Jeez.
Holy shit, right? Holy
individuality.
Individual thought that gets things done.
Right.
Free thinking, that we don't have fear and old thinking locked into... So you can come away, because I don't know history, but you come away with a new Tennessee Railroad Act. You know, you become a better, a new, you bring back the labor leader that cared about the workers instead of these mafia fucks who run the whole thing, these dick sucks. Because I saw these really good comics slowly pull back. And you could, if they didn't, we'd all have a fighting chance. But it's up to you to have a fighting chance.
Right.
If we didn't, we'd all have be in this fight together. I should tell you about the midget, right?
Oh yeah, this midget who had access to a harem of beautiful women that they would always choose you. Who is this guy?
So I'm walking down. I get a call from the girl who would set me up with dates, and it was either husbands and wives or it was husbands. And the husband thing was pathetic. I didn't even know to ask for. I could have gotten $500. I asked for $60 just to get it over with,
mm-hmm.
and so I could eat. And then I started meeting rich girls in the city, and I would use the hustling money to take them to the best restaurants. Like Phoebe Cates was out one night, and this girl, I think Brooke Shields was out one night, and I was going out with this girl, a disgustingly rich girl, who had a spiral staircase open up into her house. And the elevator opened up into a marble spiral staircase room.
Yeah.
I said, and she's boring in her fur coat and bragging about it. And she goes, would you like a drink? And I said, nah, I'm going to go. And she goes, you sure? I said, all right, I'll have a scotch. I got a case full of Quaaludes and heroin. And she presses a button in the wall, and this bar comes out, and scotch pours into a glass. And it goes like, and hangs over the ledge so you can grab it.
Yeah.
Like put a piece of the ledge, and I go, well, I'm going to stay with her for a while, you know.
Yeah.
It was so boring. But I screwed all these girls at Dalton University, all these rich ballerinas, and they were the best. Then I went out with one Long Island girl who gave me crabs, and I gave all of Dalton crabs. And I walked in, I was drunk, and they wouldn't go out with me anymore. I was a bad boy, and it was a preppy party. I walk in, and they're all looking at me like, what are you doing here? And I went like, I gave all your girlfriends crabs. And I walked out. So the midget, yeah. Long story short, the midget was the girl who set me up with these guys. You know, she said I had to do guys first. She said, I finally got you a thing with women. I go, oh, great. She goes... This guy's gonna pick you up. He's gonna look like the Marlboro Man. He's gonna have a cowboy hat, mustache. I said, you gonna have a cowboy hat, like Midnight Cowboy? And he had a cowboy hat on. And we're walking down the street to the penthouse, this high rise. And he said, well, now I just want to tell you, when we get there, there's gonna be a pile of cocaine, so as much as you want. A beautiful girl will come out blindfolded. I've been hanging out with this guy from the poetry reading, and my sponsors, they all say, like, they even say, like, you're one girl's into religion, she's like, you're like an apostle. She's like, you know, and I sit with this, I get so mad. All these people suffering and struggling because of the hype. You know, we're paying too much for this shit.
Just being out, get you bummed out, seeing people walk around their life.
They're just having the best time they can have, right? But I take it all on, like Jesus.
Right, yeah.
I'm really hurt.
Bear the burdens of the world on your shoulders.
Yeah, and the truth is, if I don't accept it, I'm not going to show up. I'm just going to be like, why do I feel this burden? Well, just know you got it. And you're lucky you have the material. But
the midget guy.
So he goes, and you'll be doing cocaine and smoking some cigarettes, you know, you'll be waiting a while because they always pick, they put on blindfolds and they pick by the sound of your voice. And I always get picked first. They love my voice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I said, oh, all right. So they came out. First girl comes out. Beautiful, Brazilian. Like, shit. Just beautiful. We're in a blindfold. That's beautiful. And she goes, you speak, you know, and he talks and I talk, and she goes, you, about me. And he goes, oh, motherfucker, I ain't bringing you back on this one. And so I fucked her. And it was gorgeous, gorgeous. Like well-powdered, lotioned 18-year-olds. I said, I wonder who these girls are. And then I got called again. Once a week, every Sunday night, I go there.
Hey, Rick, yeah, there's some really hot chicks. They need some dick. We need a guy. It sounds like the most dream job possible. Like, what is going on here?
Yeah, and they say, whatever you do, don't take the blindfold off. Do not take the blindfold off. I said, this is great. And so I fucked another girl, another girl, another girl. And they were just priceless. You wouldn't meet them at clubs. You'd meet them at fine restaurants. You know, they had this upscale look. That's when I was with the Brazilian girl. These little strong legs, smooth skin, curve of her back, smooth ass, waxed, everything. Like, before waxing was a big deal. And mop top, beautiful bob hair, you know, and do whatever. And next thing I know, this bolt of lightning, I can see it, like, come down from the sky, even though my eyes were closed. And shh, and I went, whoa. And I pull her to me, and we both start coming. And she goes, whoa, she pulls her eye, almost the same time, pulls her eye mask off. And you can see, we saw the same thing. We looked at each other, and she touched my face. And I said, who are you? Who are you? And it felt like being in love. You know, when your life's been different, it's possible that falling in love can be different, too. Even if your life's been the same, it's possible that your fucking life can be different instead of offensive, just different. So as I grab her and start to fuck her more, this midget jumps from behind a full-length, what looked like a full-length mirror, and he jumps up on the bed and he says, get out of here, get out of here. I said, no, let me, it came up by accident. I didn't see anything, I'm putting her mask back on, let me just fuck her. And I'm holding her mask, and he goes, get out of here, get out of here, and he tries to punch me, so I pushed her off.
So midget jumps out from behind a two-way mirror. Presumably he's been watching the whole time. Like, he's just the cupboard midget who's monitoring the sex you're having.
Well, it turns out he owned a string of racehorses, and this was a penthouse apartment. This was a gorgeous apartment. It's possible for a midget.
So he would hire people to have sex with these chicks because he was too tall. He was too short to have sex.
Maybe with them. I never asked him why.
But it's a bizarre situation.
I know, isn't that crazy?
It's crazy.
That's why I don't understand life. Like, I told people in AA, I said, I'll take a pill right now and rob a store. I said, I don't understand the rules of life. Why do you want to build a family? Why? And then I could think it through slowly and go, because they'll hang around you, you'll have a legacy, they'll be around your deathbed. I'll tell them, I don't have to see you till I die. I want you around my deathbed so I don't feel like a loser.
Well, you'll be dead then, who cares?
No, if I'm dying.
Oh, I see.
But so he runs after me. I jump off the bed with my legs, trying to put them in my pants, trip, fall by the elevator, put my pants on, and the door slams. I go, you're afraid of a midget? You were just afraid, running around in a room, afraid of a midget. That part, of course, gets me to laugh. The rest I take for granted.
He may have been coked up. He could have been very powerful for his size, you know. He could have been on some kind of wacky juice or something.
Yeah, he could have spun me around the top of his head.
Kind of like learned how to eke a living by manipulating the egos of junkies and whoever you are around and people who are hiring you as a hooker, you know. You would try it. You would be like, look, I'm into crazier stuff than you are. I'm into crazier stuff than you are. And then you would like...
It's so funny. You know about my con? The con I used to do?
I heard about this. Yeah.
Leave me alone. I'm tired of feeling like a freak. I'm crazy, right?
Yeah.
We got that line?
Yeah.
That's so funny.
So you would like kind of con people, you know,
After a while,
you got really street smart about being a. So you want to describe some of that stuff?
Yeah, first of all, I liked being a hustler because I was a loner, and I was living with my sister, and she had all these parties. It was all hype. She was rich, and I found out years later that my father was very rich and giving credit cards and condos to my sister and my brother. And I was making myself live on $9 a week. See, this is where I get confused about keeping a girlfriend. Am I afraid of her? Am I afraid I can't get along without her? Like so many of my friends who are married say, or I can't handle the things she can handle, my business, my this, my that. And I had a great week while she was gone. But I also adore her. Like I respect her. And I might even love her. But when I'd like to take a chance and not be involved. But the girls I did go out with seemed like small change compared to her.
Right.
So that's why I get mad in the middle. I'm very confused. I'm in the middle of a situation. And I'm in L.A. I'll pay for this. I'm going to get pancakes.
No, but you were in the middle of talking about...
So I was with my sister, and she was fucking the pizza delivery guy, that tough guy. So he'd be like, how you doing? I'd be like, yeah, you're using my sister. And she would go in and screw the guy, let him kind of come out. And she was kind of loose. You know, like girls were. And they are. Now it's not loose. Now they're independent. But back then it was loose.
Right.
Look at this gorgeous girl. I better put my hat on so there's no losing my hair. You gotta look at these girls. They fell from the wildest, pinkest clouds. Ow, my foot!
You were talking about your hustle there.
Oh, yeah, so I go downstairs. I walk over to 54th Street. There's no easy way to tell it. I was paying for acting school. Initially, I brought it from my $500 from my parents, but they wouldn't pay for acting school, so I was taking an acting class, and it was beautiful. And I was really shy and drunk. And long story short, I found out that's what I'm supposed to do. It was you don't judge men, you play their lives, you live their lives. So I would tell my teacher, this is the first time I'm judging guys in suits. You know, I'm playing like the guys from Glengarry, Glen Ross, and understanding their situation. Mm-hmm. So I walked out, and then I'd have to go to a dishwashing job. And it broke like a wall. It looked like it was blown up to make another room. Like the whole, I had to climb through a hole to get to the small dishwashing thing. A restaurant called Dino's, and I would do dishes uptight in a little room and walk home. You know, I was in acting class. Lived on $9 a week. I was very satisfied and sad. I was always sad. I thought you were supposed to be. I said, I can't go back to the job. I have $10 left in my pocket. I'm tired of starving. I said, I'm just tired of being broken. I go to this restaurant that was across from the acting school called Rounds, and it had white Christmas lights around a smoky window, black. It looked like an oasis. I said, a dark room, white Christmas lights, it seems all right. So I walked in, and it had a long walkway, and it was a nice place, and it was kind of quiet. So I'm eating, I said, all I want is steak and stuff, mushrooms. I would look at that every day. And I said, and back then it was $10. So I gave him, you know, like I had 10 or 11 bucks, I gave him 10. I said, can I have my check, please? And I was in a little denim jacket, little bangs, little nose like this, and the guy, American flag on the back of the jacket, and skinny kid, and the guy goes, really out loud, he goes, it's been paid for, as if he didn't know. And he looks around, and I said, well, what are you doing? I want my check. And he goes, oh, it's been paid for, as if he didn't know. And I said, well, what the hell are you doing? He goes, it's been paid for. And as he's saying that, I looked around. I said, I don't know what's weird about this restaurant. He goes, oh, give me your hand. I said, what? He goes, I want the check. He goes, give me your hand. I will take you to them. And as he said that, I looked around, and I said, there's no women here. And there was this big old bodybuilder in a rugby shirt and a toupee and a skinny little Andy Warhol at age 18 in a blue blazer and light hair. And they were waving to me, and I said, did they pay for my check? He goes, oh, give me your hand. I said, I know. I said, all right. And I gave him my hand, and he walked me across, and the guy, I sit down, and the bodybuilder puts his hand on my leg, and he goes, can I buy a drink? I said, sure. I was a big drunk. And he goes, how'd you like to come back to the house with us? Where are you from? Blah, blah, blah. How'd you like to come back to the house with us? I said, sure. Can I have another scotch? And he gives me another scotch. And he goes, and you'll come back and this is good scotch. Can I get another one? Yeah. And can I get two? And he goes, sure. He goes, because I had a plan, and I was drinking, and he goes, would you like to dress like a lifeguard? Or I'd love for you to dress like a lifeguard. I go, if I can get another scotch. So he gave me another scotch. I was bent. And then I said, I'll be right back, and I left. So I did that every night until the owner came up to me, and he said, the first night the guy bought my meal, I walked by the bar, and the bar had fat old men in suits leaning against it, looking at the wall, which had little boys with dark hair, little John Stamoses and Ralph Macchios with bangs, and leather jackets leaning sad against the wall, and the fat guys would come over and pick a guy to buy a drink. So I said, hustler bar. So I would go there every night. So the guy pulls me aside with three other hustlers, and he goes, someone's not pulling their chain around here. Mother hen must talk to her chickens, and she pinched my nipples. Someone's not getting hard for the customers or even going home with the customers. Because I did massage for him every day. That's how I got started, too, $25 for massage. So I would do four so I could party at night.
Right.
And they would try to blow me, but I couldn't get hard. That's when I really started. I couldn't get hard. Like the guy.
So like, where was this? They would take you from this kind of hustler bar to a different place. Where
no,
there was
no.
Like a massage back room.
No, I had to start as a masseuse.
Okay.
And they taught me this fake massage where you rub their back and you keep doing it, and then they're gonna want to blow you. So they turn over, and then they blow you. And the owner of the company said, you didn't even get hard for me. I said, so I told him, well, I started jogging. That makes you lose your heart on, right? Like I'm talking like this, like, right? I feel so weird. Like, I'm so horny. I'm so fucking horny. All I had to do was say that five times. I got a job at Saks Fifth Avenue. The guy says, no, we are not hiring. And I fixed his tie. He goes, you can come in on Monday. You know? So I would always be like this guy, like, really look up to people. Like,
yeah.
That's weird, right? You know, lick my lips and all that shit. And so he goes, all right, you can work for
us. So you were just trying to look vulnerable or something, or naive, and that's what they would prey upon, your naivety.
Yeah.
So you kind of knew what the fucking sickos wanted or whatever.
Well, if you weren't getting it hard, you better not make like you knew more than them or knew what the organization was about.
Right.
Because there was also mob ties there, too. So you had to just be like, oh, he's safe. We can keep him around, throw him for a day.
So this is kind of, you found yourself in the underground gay mafia.
Yeah, I went on a gay mafia cruise, too.
What's a gay mafia cruise?
It's unbelievable. It's everybody who looks like Big Pussy as a juxtaposed to gay mafia. Everybody looks like Vinnie Pastore, these big, fat, black Italian, you know, like the dark hair, dark Italian. In warm-up suits, yellow and pink, having a barbecue on the beach, and my guy was in a yellow warm-up suit, and he was chasing me down the street, down the beach. And all I know is, before he came, I raced the seagull, and it won. And then it came back and stayed over my head. I said, "You want to race again?" And I raced him again, and I won. And I left, and he came back again. It was over my head, and I go on the beach, and he's standing over my head, and I look at the. I swear to God, I look at the mafia guy, and he's like, your yellow ball at this point from far away. He goes, Rick, come back, we have to have dinner. Can't, you know? And I looked at it, I go, you're trying to tell me something. And I kept running. And I missed the obvious, but what I took from it was, you're trying to tell me I can get out of here, and one day I will be out of here. Because I thought there was no way out for me.
Right.
My parents told me I was so stupid.
If you tried to leave that, were you worried that they would kill you or whatever?
No, you can leave. Gay shit, the gay community business, but you can't leave, because my mafia's don't give a shit what the gay guys do. I wasn't a worker for the mob in that capacity. I was the workers hired me for parties. So we go on the cruise, and I managed to find the only girl on the cruise ship. She's this fat, but when you were surrounded by men who were slobbering over you, she looked gorgeous to me. She looked hot. I made out with her all night. And the husband, the wife called me in to her home and said, "You hurt Nick really bad." Nick, the guy who drives a Ferrari, little mustache, pink skin, says, "If I make it to the next 9 lights, I get 9 free blowjobs." I said, "No, nobody makes it through 9 lights." He did. And I'm blowing him for free one night. Staring at his fish tank that was over his bed, looking at that one fish, and I'm blowing. I'm like, "Your life is sick."
And he's like pink like a lobster from too much sun tanning.
From facial shit, all that shit. They were just raw. He goes, I wanted you to come over for a different reason, actually. The husband walking into the living room, and he goes, "My wife wants to play a song." And they play Dr. Doolittle, about the sea lion, Dorothy, 20,000 years of pain. And he played this song about how she has 20,000 years of pain and no one to tell it to. And I was just like, sob. I looked at him like they were my parents. I just went like, and they go, "You gotta stop."
So this guy, who is this gay mobster, who was very offended that you made out with a girl because you were his boy toy that he had hired for this party.
Yeah.
He wanted you to be doting over him. But anyway, he also has this wife, and the wife and him were parent figures to you.
At that time, I had never met the wife till the Mafia Cruise.
Right.
But she
knew
about it.
Mafia Cruise?
Yeah.
So she was open with her husband doing this.
Yeah. And I think she probably even found out he was completely gay and he was... Yeah, like
she
looked
was
like,
okay with
she looked like they had a marriage of convenience, and that's what they wanted. Like, a lot of people moved to New York for different types of things. There was a lot of swingers, you know, big business, drug addicts. She was a woman who wanted to marry a guy who was rich, and she also knew how to run big business and had fake tits, and you could tell she was into fashion.
So she just kind of liked the lifestyle and the fur, and she didn't really care if her husband was sucking cock on her. Yeah, that was.
Yeah, they
really
were more like
business.
Friends. What I caught, because I could read people fast, is they have a beautiful friendship.
Right. That is so crazy.
Yeah.
You've led, like, some of the most interesting lives. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, but it's starting to hurt. The hustle was, I would stand at the bar, sick of going up to the Y and letting them blow me, or I learned all they wanted was a fat action.
Right.
So the big businessman, I would hold it. They'd be on the phone saying, "All right, Toots, don't nag me, bitch. I told you I'll be in the Hamptons on Sunday. You fucking cunt." And he hangs up. He goes, "Broads, right, Rick? Come in the bedroom." And he'd get undressed, and all of a sudden he looked like an infant. He put his head up to my chest and went, oh. And I had to hold him and pat his head. And I said, "All they want is to be gay.
Right.
And they can't be."
You're talking about this senator guy?
Yeah. I saw a picture of his son in the military school. And, you know, then he'd slide his head up and give me a kiss, and I'd have to suck on his tongue. I'd be like, you know, I don't want to do that. But I just did it like the Operation game, like, Like I said, I blew him like the Operation game. Like, and then I would just say, it's wood. You know, I'd pretend everything is wood till a guy in A would always come up to me and be like, it's wood. I love that.
You're just straight surviving, yeah. You're just like, yeah.
That's all I've ever been doing.
You, also, you know, you,
That's all I've ever been doing.
You went to dark places, you know, you were doing heroin, and you said that you spent one time just 3 days just binging on heroin, you know? So what was it like,
I spent weeks binging on heroin.
Yeah.
What's that like?
What were you getting from that? Was it medical for, like, your trauma? Were you trying to cover up for the trauma that had happened?
Yeah, but it's also, I wrote a little thing that I forgot to be getting. Freebase, the sweetest tasting smoke that ever coiled around your soul. Your eyes pop out, your dick drops off, and all your problems solved and questions answered to you until it's over and you just begin again. Like, I used to smoke bowl, I used to base heroin. It was like cotton candy. It could ruin my life right now and I'd be happy. It was delicious. I would go out with Catholic schoolgirls, 16 years old, pull up their little Catholic schoolgirl dress, snort coke off their little butt cheek, And then the girls would come over to date. I said, "I'll be right out." And the famous hairdresser and the mafia and the Jewish mob guy and the Colombian and I would be sitting in a circle kneeling like girls in a bed telling stories, but we'd be passing around a freebase pipe real fast before we go out. And then we'd slow down. And I left the girl out there for 2 hours. or I guess an hour, but it sure seemed like I left her out there a long fucking time, and she wouldn't speak up. Like, and we looked at you, we love you, guys, we love each other, we're brothers. And then I'm like taking her to a Studio 54, and the floor is slanting coming up on me, and it was great.
But LA drives you crazy, and people here drive you crazy. You see the billboards that try to like brainwash people into a certain culture. So how have people changed over the years? You know, it seems like when you talk about it, people are like, oh, this guy was in the Colombian mob. This guy was in Italian. People like wore their secrets on their sleeve a little bit more and kind of led more authentic lives. Is that... And then, like, nowadays people are afraid to have opinions. Is that kind of how you see it?
That's interesting. That took a turn, that question. That's interesting because people had lives that were more interesting.
Or they just wore their problems on their sleeve.
Well, now everybody deals meth. Everybody smokes meth from a log cabin. You know what I mean? Like, everybody's broken some shack in America. So it's more depressing. I saw Gelsey Kirkland. You know her, the prima ballerina?
I don't know Gelsey.
Number one ballerina in the world.
Uh-huh.
Known it, that's when they call you the prima ballerina. And I saw them shoot her up and she couldn't walk. She had a recital of Swan Lake at Lincoln Center.
Yeah.
And I took her in the car. She's screaming and hitting me, saying, I hate ballet. Please kill me. Please make me stop. I hate ballet. It's destroyed me. It's hell. It's hell. And I'm like, that wasn't new to me. I put my arm around her and she kept saying, please, please, crying, sobbing. I'm dragging her up the stairs like her feet are hitting the steps. You know, they're talking like this.
Yeah.
And I carried her into the dressing room. I said, I just got to be in here for a minute to help get Elsie out. And I help her put on her little thing and then I'd leave. And I'd look through the window of the rehearsal room and she would be flying like a swan. No problem. It's like me, like I could actually perform tonight being this sick. But I don't. Well, what I mean is, when you're a performer, you perform best when you're like 102 degree temperature.
Right. How, in the last 30 years, how have people changed that you see walking on the street?
Yes, it's just exactly how the interview started. It was you pointing out that you can't have, I'm going to call it this, a discussion with your friend.
Right.
That's the first step to death. It's like, I wish the apocalypse, the people in charge of the apocalypse would do their job. You know what I mean? That's a joke I wrote the other day. But I was like, they think they can do other things. Like when I had a TV show, they thought they could hassle me. And I would just choke them. I would say, is this a fight? Before I choked them, they'd say, why it gotta be about that, man? And be like, people say you and me are like brothers, man. He put his arm around me and started poking me. And my agent said people would try to sue you, so don't get into any fights, and I know you have a temper. So I said, is this a fight? And he goes, yo, why it gotta be about that, bro? And he goes, people say we're doppelgangers. I said, is this a fight? And he goes, why it gotta be? I said, is this a fight? And he goes, right like that, until he couldn't breathe. And I said, is this a fight? And he goes, I said, good. And I don't know any other moves, so I wanted to drop him and kick him and spit on him. But that's how I meet girls. Like, I walk out, the next day, I killed in that room after Natasha went up years ago.
Right.
And I slaughtered the room, and the waitress, you know how hot LA waitresses are, this is the hottest one. She sends me an email the next day, all of a sudden I get an email. I don't know how she got it, but she goes, Mad Max walking down the street with a ripped up shirt because he tried to hold on to me while I left and he ripped this expensive shirt I bought and the whole thing fell apart. I never bought expensive shirts. And I'm walking around with like heaving, you know, because I wanted to hit the guy because he kept following me. And I said, get away from me. And I realized what my lawyer said. So I jumped into a cab for mine. He tried to get in with me. I had to push him. And she goes, Mad Max walking around the street like in a ripped shirt. You're my Mad Max. And then she was high on heroin. I went to her house, the most gorgeous girl I ever saw. And I ate her ass when she didn't know it.
Does she have a blindfold on and did a midget fall out the cupboard afterward?
No, but it's make a mild or bold choice, like Danny says. So what are you going to do?
I might as well make a bold choice, but I wouldn't want to be diagnosed by being an individual. So
Right. You have to go on 17 medications.
That's the worst thing you could have, yeah.
So I'll tell you a quick story.
All right.
Is I would be at the bar, and I got tired of the hustle and everything. And it was a gazebo, so I'd always be in the back hiding out. Like, my family couldn't find me. And this guy would come up and be like, "Do you want to play?" I'd be like, "No." He goes, "You're an actor?" I go, "Yeah." He goes, "You know, you've heard of John Voight, haven't you? Why don't you just leave me alone, man? I'm sick of being called a freak. The shit I'm into. No, no. Fuck you. You and John Voight, you probably do up missionary like fucking straights. Leave me alone." And I walked away. And he goes, "What?" And he comes back. He goes, "What are you into?" I said, I looked at him like this. I would go, like, I almost wanted to touch him, like, they're here, like, "Dad?" You're like, and I'd be like, "Nothing. Why don't you just leave me alone? It's too much for you to handle. Who the hell cares? You call me a freak and buy a new vase or something. You know, you're just nothing. You're just nothing. And everybody, and I'm tired of being alone. I'm tired of being left out. I'm tired of being called a freak before they even try, man. Leave me alone." And he comes up to me. He goes, "No, seriously, I want to know. You're interested. Can I buy a drink?" I said, "No, I guess." And he bought me a drink. And then I said, So tell me what you're into. And I said, and I look at him, I go, "Well, it's beautiful." It's like, I forget it. Sick of being called names. Sick of the whole thing. So what if I never find anybody who knows how good it is? Besides, like, who cares? It's too expensive anyway. Leave me alone. Just stay away from me, and I will walk away. So long story short, I had him all the way going out to the gazebo. "No, tell me, leave me alone. It's like wild with colors, and it's too expensive. Leave me alone." He said, what is it? I said, "You ain't going to be into it. It's too expensive anyway. I'm not interested in telling you, but maybe people should know. Like, it's beautiful, right? It's beautiful what we do, right? It's beautiful." And he'd be like, "Yeah, I guess. It can get ugly at times, you know, whatever." And I'd say, it's beautiful. Like, the noise that comes out of us is like, man, like, when you come, and I'd be looking in his eyes, you know, like, "When you come," and wet my lips and drink my scotch, breathe a little scotch in his mouth almost, like, up close. Like, when you come, it's like, makes me come. And you're not alone. Like, you're a stick of, you're like dynamite. You're firecrackers. And you could be in two different rooms, and it's perfect. It's even more perfect in two different rooms. So, you know, you're rubbing your dick, and you're rubbing your own thighs, and you're in one room, and he's in the other, and you know what he's doing, and you ask him what he's doing, and he tells... I forget it. See, I know it. It's so fucking beautiful. And I would start to cry. So he goes, "Let's try it." So I go upstairs, I go, "Well, okay." I go, "Really?" Like, you know, like, it's only 100. Just put 100 on the dresser, and I'll be in the bathroom, you, and I'll be getting undressed. Like, not telling him I'll be undressed, but staying in that room. He like, forgot. And so I would start going, and then he started drinking. I mean, hear him go, and I go, and I have my clothes on. And I go, and I ran out and grabbed 100 while he was jerking off.
You just did it just until he broke a stride.
Just it until he'd get into stride. His zone. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he wouldn't lift his head up so fast. And I just ran. And then the restaurant found out about it. And they circled me and tried to beat the crap out of me. Like, "We know what you're doing." And I just left. And then eventually gave up the whole fucking thing.
Oh my God, Rick.
But I would have to blow guys at first. No. They would blow them. Yeah. And that was hard. That was hard. Yeah. Because you're straight.
Right.
And you're lonely. And you're going against your sexuality. I always heard this. Like they would slap my dick. And they would, get up, I'll do you. No, they would slap my head or something. Like, get up. I had to do it with a mic. I go, "Get up, I'll do you. You're worse than my wife." Which was a true story. And I said, "How am I going to get hard?" That was the first time I was like, "How am I going to get fucking hard?" So I thought about Farrah Fawcett back then. I thought about every girl I've ever thought about my whole life till 9 years later, letting guys blow me. I forgot I couldn't think of anything. I put nipples, I sat on stage, I put nipples on tables, nipples on my grandmother's arm fat. The agency found out I wasn't gay, and they locked me in a room with a bodybuilder and chased me around with a lamp.
So the agency, the call boy agency that you were associated with, put you in a room in solitary confinement with a buff man to try to set you straight?
To be raped, yeah. And he was running around the room chasing me with a lamp in his hand. I kept running on top of the cot, running off. And then I said, this is the first floor and the window's open. I couldn't believe it. I was like, see ya. And I jumped out.
Oh my fucking Christ, man.
Oh, they got me so paranoid, too. But I had to carry opposing dealers' drugs, which never happens. You don't do that shit. But I was just a guy who said yes. I didn't have any loyalties. I had no feelings.
You would move products for rival gangs?
Yeah, people would ask me. Like,
would you like get on planes and stuff and transport stuff?
Yeah, and it was so funny. I just thought I was white. I said, nobody's going to catch me. I'm a middle-class Jew.
Right.
And I put it in a pillowcase almost on top of everything. And they open it up, and they move the pillowcase out of the way, move the teddy bear. It was in a pillow. You wouldn't ask, why do you have a pillow in your suitcase? And I got away with it all the fucking time. I have a joke that says, people with Down syndrome deserve jobs. And we all know that they'd be great drug couriers. And they actually laugh at that sometimes. I say, because they always tell the truth, and nobody ever believes them. Seriously, go up to a kid with Down syndrome and you go, here, you carry the 68 grams of heroin through the airport in Arizona and make sure you don't get caught. Okay. In your backpack. Okay. It's here. And they'd be like, oh, it's not here. One of the guys, it's not here yet, kid, but go on through. Let him through security. He wants to watch the airplanes. You get him a sandwich, too, and you go, thank you. It's here.
Nobody questions it. Well, you want to talk about some news stories? I can bring up a weird news story, and then we can talk about it.
I'll try.
This has been just an absolute pleasure, man. Honestly,
yeah, me too.
It's been really fun for me having you on the podcast, for sure. Thanks a lot for doing this, by the way.
Yeah, me too.
So this guy called Mark Coonrippy Brown, he put a bunch of YouTube videos out of him taking a shower with his raccoon, right? The Tennessee legislator said, oh, wait, you can't have a rabid animal. So then they seized his raccoon.
I kept her from being in captivity. What I did should be commended, not condemned. So I asked the governor of Tennessee, pardon me.
So now he's running for governor of Tennessee to get his raccoon back, just so that he can have the authority to, you know, get his raccoon out of the evidence locker.
Well, he loves his raccoon. He takes him in the shower, right?
Yeah.
So what would you do for love? What would you do for your pet?
Yeah, and we were talking earlier about that.
And also, I like it because it stirs people to, like, it's so easily dismissed.
Yeah.
But because of the thugs, that like the Republicans and Democrats would say, these thugs are taking over our town. Or taking over our internet. Like, that guy, A, did anything for his pet. B, the good guys are the scumbags telling me he can't have a pet in the shower. Maybe it is illegal to have one of those pets. Maybe he should have been smarter. You know, sometimes you have to point out other facts. Like, it is against the law, so why would you be stupid enough to display it? But to fight the law is a great thing. To say, well, I don't think it ought to be against the law. I love raccoons.
Right.
And it stirs people to think that they can run. Maybe some fucking hidden genius called moron, like I was called a dumb fucking, I was tortured in college. So, but I know I was really smart. And people tell me all the time. And he turns out to be a guy who should run for governor. He actually tried to make change. Like, instead of shrugging things off so easily, people should investigate all the details that go run through their minds and see how it works on them. Maybe it inspires them to go and be the principal of a school so everybody can play with the raccoons on the third floor.
And also, people in the Tennessee legislature assume that they know what the raccoon is thinking. They're like, in the raccoon's best interest, he should be, digging through garbage or scavenging. You know, that
Did
raccoon,
they say that?
No, but I'm saying, like, that raccoon might have this, you know, great love for, and admiration for his man, but somehow they think that it's okay for them to take it away because they know better, because that's a wild animal.
Well,
if this raccoon's sitting on the guy's shoulder, it seems to be participating in this relationship.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So, yeah, he's got a friend.
He's got a buddy. So I say go get that raccoon back, man. Become the governor, become the president, and, that's legit.
The problems we have in society.
Of a raccoon,
is this guy such a racist that he could only think about hating people, hating a race and raccoons? like, what kind of a man with a mind has time for that shit?
Right.
When he's running a state.
Yeah.
So that's a sad. That's a sad state.
Doesn't the Tennessee legislator have any bankers to throw in jail? No. Let's get this guy.
Yeah. That's
raccoon.
The essence.
Yeah.
That should piss people off. I wish people are getting so disheartened about demonstration.
Right.
Like nobody would go down there and say, don't say save the raccoon or help the boy have his raccoon back. Say governors are governor wasting his time on raccoon bill.
Right. That should be the headline.
Yeah. In fact, I know. There's a better way to demonstrate. Go into a bank, I say, with 30 of your friends, and rob it, and throw the money around. Say, we ain't here for the money. We're here to let you know the town's mad at you. You know, let people know how you fucking feel, and let them know again, and let them know again. You know, go piss in the middle of Starbucks. I said, I mean it.
Yeah.
Go with five of your friends, piss all over a $90 coffee cup for sale, piss on it, and run. Just get out of there and say this is bullshit.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand. People go like, you're crazy, Rick. And I say, no, you're crazy. You sedate little orphan Annie who's happy with whoever your protagonist with a bank account is. Scumbags.
Oklahoma City has placed a Ten Commandments monument at the state capitol. And some people are understandably upset about that because that's public land and they shouldn't be endorsing any specific type of religion. However, there are other religions that are allowed to apply to erect any type of monument that they please. And one religion, or I don't know if I would call it a religion, but Satanists would like to put up a satanic monument in order to raise awareness about their beliefs, okay?
Hmm.
So the Satanic Temple is based in New York. They have applied, however, it's unlikely that they're going to get what they want. And they wrote the following. The monument has been designed to reflect the views of Satanists in Oklahoma City and beyond. The statue will also have a functional purpose as a chair where people of all ages may sit on the lap of Satan for inspiration and contemplation.
Huh. Well, indeed.
And there is a sketch of what they're hoping to build there.
I like how they've got the kids there. And it's the little kids right next to the goat-like Satan.
In New York, it's much easier to be an atheist because there's a lot of people around to talk about it. You know, it's like fun to be an atheist. You fucking bathrooms, you punch a guy out. Here it's like
you do whatever you want.
Here it's like I can't do any of that idiot, that idiot, that idiot, that idiot, that idiot, that poser, that poser, that poser. So they're the devil, you know, and I can ease up on myself. But the way these guys use the devil was Satanism.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's the kind of Satanism I read about, where the principles, the tenets, are actually great.
Right.
And about doing what you want.
And I mean, that's what everyone does anyway. Christianity is just made up, and it's just a made up. It might as well. I think it's equivalent to like the Hobbit novels. It's just mythology to be read. It's got nothing to do with anything that actually happened. You know, the Bible is just a bunch of made up stories. And so there's another group called the religion or the cult of the flying spaghetti monster is also applied to have a statue in this same place. So they're applying for a statue of Satan and also the flying spaghetti monster next to the Ten Commandments, which I think that's very good, like, kind of anarchical activism by having, okay, you want a Ten Commandments here? We're also going to have a Satan statue next to it and a flying spaghetti monster next to it, because that's what we think of your God, you know?
And it works on all three for people who worship any authority.
Yeah.
Any authority.
If you put some other kind of deity in front of yourself, you know, you're living for some kind of pyramid doctrine that's got nothing to do with you, you know.
Pyramid doctrine?
Yeah.
Let me ask you something. I struggle with the God thing because from doing so many drugs, I try to overcompensate with where I should be with my life, and I try too hard to finish my writing. I try too hard to get too many spots. I won't have a girlfriend. I didn't go to museums for 30 years. Went to like two museums. Was blown away by the museums I went to, and I paint. You know, I give up my life for this. If I believed in God, I might have eased up. Like. An atheist might say things come to you. Like my therapist would say, why don't you stop and let things come to you for a while? But when they come, he's an atheist. He said, that's because you've been out there doing the work. But I feel like, isn't that God? Like I hear so much about God in AA. And I see when I step out of the way, more things happen than when I jump in. But then I'm starting to wonder if that's even true.
Right.
I mean, you know how much rejection in comedy there is. Well, is that not... What if you had a God? What would you think? Would you go, like, he's helping me? Or do you go... when you say God, do you consider the universe? That the universe will respond like they say, which I never grew up with, never heard of? Do you believe in that? No, right?
Well, you know, I was raised Catholic, you know, and then I was atheist all through college, and then I did mushrooms, you know, and I saw this kind of, it broke my mind open where I saw the world as all these fractals of all these different people with their eyeballs and all these different consciousnesses experiencing the world, walking around the world kind of simultaneously in this soup of everyone's perspective, like illuminating the part of the world that they're looking at. You know, I think that there's so, and things that happen, or if you get a spot, or if you do, if you write a screenplay and that gets made, like all these things, you can't possibly understand all the different, everyone's different motivation for whose sitcom they greenlight, or so it's just like, I don't know, it's too, to boil it down to a God or a Satan, I think is, it's just shit happens, man. There's just, it's kind of the God question I always struggle with, you know, because it's like, what is God? Yeah.
Because you're so clear. Oh, you mean God without religion?
Right.
That's cool.
You look around, you see trees, you see plants, you see all this like biodiverse, all these different plants, all these different animals and stuff, and it's almost like, what is the spirit world that got manifest, like you know, you have a thought and then you build a chair, and so that chair started as a thought and then it became a chair because someone made it. Seems like frogs and plants and all these different animals, there needed to be a thought before that happened in the real world here. But what, you know what I mean, almost like a spirit world.
Yeah.
Or, so I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
But it seems to be that is the big question of what is the force that made nature different? What is this?
Yeah, and
this
if they can invent
force, yeah,
blood to wine,
yeah,
and walking on water, then they know that it's a thought, but they won't tell us how the thought originated, because it keeps people oppressed, or, I mean, there's this new thing running around, this new video running around, how people are. Roseanne Barr even says there is a devil in charge of Hollywood, and you do have to sign that contract where you sell your soul. It's an actual man. Mm-hmm. And that's why Christina Aguilera and all these other girls go from 14 in jeans and t-shirts to the same leather outfit, like the strap over their nipples and little vagina cover, and then they all start looking, they play it in slow motion, they all look like this, like, and their eyes go.
Yeah.
And she goes, you can catch the moment, and they just go, oh, like You know, like how else would they have a Britney Spears? And don't give me that shit that people say. Well, some people like that because it's just easy to understand.
Right.
No, there's a devil shoving it down your... I'm starting to believe in the fucking devil because nobody could invent this town. No man in his right mind is that disconnected from his body, from his humanity, to invent a pig shit dump where people think it's okay to not have an opinion because, you know, as I heard, Spielberg might be around behind you for coffee, waiting for coffee too. And, you know, Ben, I want to throw this glass right now. How much would you give me if I threw it before I went out, before this interview ended?
I don't want to cause too much of a ruckus here.
So what? We just run.
Let's plug some stuff now, eh? So,
Tell me about your website.
It's called Here Comes Godot. I play this guy called Richard Wilson, who's like an egomaniac avant-garde theater director. And, you know, I met this guy called Richard Foreman in New York City.
Richard Foreman, man.
You know that
guy? Shit, yeah.
So I saw one of his plays, and it was just like the weirdest shit. It was like, you know, them rolling an eyeball around the stage, this donkey, you know. And just like in this voiceover over the play, like they do it with the donkey bong, and then some hot girl comes out and hits a gong, and you're like, what the hell's going on? And this guy has a trust fund, Richard Foreman, and so he has the ability, he has access to a group of actors, and anything that comes out of his ego, he makes them do, you know? And so his ego is completely boundless, where he doesn't, you know, us as a comedians, we have to get up there, we have to tell jokes, we have to get a laugh. Him, everyone watches Richard Foreman's plays, and they're just kind of confused and really irritated after 3 hours of nonsense theater, and then he's like, oh, if you didn't get it, I'm a genius, you know what I mean? Like, if you didn't understand what I'm doing, I'm a genius. No, you're a fucking fraud, man.
That's what hack comics say.
Yeah, so this is the web series called Here Comes Godot. I also have another thing coming out called... Theater of the Deranged 2. It's a DVD of it's a bunch of short horror films, and I host it as this character called Damien Shadows. That's coming out May 10th. And go to erichollerbach.com and check out when I'm touring, when I'm doing stand-up, and click through the Highway Diary RSS feed and do some Amazon shopping. It'll kick a little bit back to the show. Mostly the super virus called Amazon.com that's taking over retail shops worldwide. They get most of the money, but they throw us a little peasant kickback, you know, to keep the show going.
Amazon.com?
Yeah.
Or you can go to Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, BarnesandNoble.com, and buy my book, Unfiltered. Mm-hmm. It's fucking cool as hell. Nobody lived the way I live. Nobody thinks the way I think. And I'm not saying I'm the only one who has his own unique way. I'm saying I'm one of the guys who does, and it's really, you can throw the book out when you're done and then run back to the trash because you got it as you were throwing the book out. And you fucking got it. Like, you can read that book and get it. It's so cool. It's so cool what it can do to your mind.
Yeah.
And we need people's minds to know that they can do what they really want. And I got a CD, what is it? Unconditional Love. My first CD, which got 5 stars in Billboard when they wouldn't review comedy. Catalyst for Change, my new CD from Chicago, which was really, really good, really great. And
the live at the Bowery Poetry Club, that's being put together right now.
Yeah.
That'll be your third album?
That'll be a DVD.
Okay, cool.
And fuck it, I'm spaced out tonight. I'm sick as a dog. I'm doing the Irvine Improv on Thursday and the Melrose Improv this Wednesday, whatever date this Wednesday is. Get RickShapiro.tv, my website, and RickShapiro.tv and RickShapiroTV is my Twitter name. So tweet that I promoted finally, like a tweeter, like a little tweety ass hair tweeting around my tweety ass. How's that for limerical lyricalness?
That's beautiful, man. And Rick Shapiro, his name is on the front of the fucking Comedy Store. What else do you need to go? This guy's a legend. That's another episode of the Highway Diary in the motherfucking bag. Thanks to my guest, Rick Shapiro.
Yeah, in the motherfucking bag, motherfucker. That's what's up.
Cool. Thanks a lot, man.